it develops this linguistic practice that the students can use in academic context. It's providing the access to students. It's the opportunity to connect the two languages.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Highest Aspirations, an education podcast focused on providing educators with inspiration and strategies to help multilingual learners achieve their highest aspirations. I'm your host, Steve Sofronis. We are so excited to kick off our 12th season and our 6th year of Highest Aspirations. Where does the time go? Thanks, as always, for listening and being a part of our community. I want to let everybody know that we did a little brainstorming over the break and came up with two new features. First, you'll notice a new cover design for our cover art. That is thanks to my colleague Hannah Diamond, who probably doesn't want her name recognized, but I'm doing it anyway. She's a former educator and talented designer here at Elevation. Thanks, Hannah, for creating that amazing cover art. Second, we have some new ways of bringing in your perspectives as well. Each episode this season will include a prompt designed to amplify the collective wisdom and experience of this community. You can reply to the prompt on our Elevation Educators Facebook group. Please join if you haven't already. Or if you're listening on Spotify, you can also respond to the prompt or poll in the Q&A section. There's even a voicemail feature where you can literally share your voice in any language, of course, or combination of languages you choose. We always encourage you to leverage your full linguistic repertoire. As always, we have a great lineup of guests that you'll hear from over the course of this season. Our first guest is Dr. Sandra Mercuri, who we met last fall at the La Cosecha Conference in New Mexico. Dr. Mercuri is a nationally recognized educational consultant in the area of second language acquisition, dual language education, and curriculum integration for biliteracy development. She has over 28 years of experience teaching in K-12 schools and at the university level in Argentina and the United States. As always, you can read her full bio in the show notes as well as in the accompanying blog post. She joined us to discuss how we can make connections between languages to boost literacy. Here are some things we dove into. What are cross-linguistic connections and how can they be used to develop metalinguistic awareness? How can pulling in both English and home languages during instruction actually accelerate learning, among other benefits? And how can this holistic approach to language learning lead to biliteracy? There's a lot of jargon there and a lot of words that you may or may not have heard before. One thing that I really appreciated about Dr. Mercuri was her ability to not only define these terms, but actually show us what they look like in practice. We were honored to have her join us on episode 1 of season 12 of Highest Aspirations. As always, thanks for listening. And please enjoy our conversation with Dr. Sandra Mercuri. Sandra Mercuri, thank you so much for joining us on Highest Aspirations. This has been a long time coming.
Thank you, Steve, for inviting me. It's been an honor to be invited to be here. So looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, and I always like to shout out the person who, because there's a lot of introductions that happen here. It's not just me like it used to be finding people. My colleague Kirva Raj, I think, met you on the plane ride back from La Cosecha. And is that right?
Yeah. No, at Tabe, we were just checking out the hotel and she said, oh, you have to do this interview with Steve. I'm going to put you in contact with him. And that's how it happened.
That's great. I didn't know it was a plane or a hotel or La Cosecha or Tabe, but somewhere in that time. Well, it's great. And thank you, Hirva, if you're listening, for making the introduction. Hirva's great. One of our great colleagues who help bring people like you to the podcast and hopefully to our community as well. So let's dive in. This concept that we're going to talk about today of cross-linguistic connections is a bit fuzzy for many of us, myself included. I feel like everyone wants to do it. And we were just talking right before we hit record button about how it's a bit of a superficial understanding. I get the sense that many of us don't quite know exactly what it is. Maybe we're too afraid to ask. And maybe more importantly, we don't know what it is not. So I thought that might be a good place to start. What is it? What is it not? Feel free to start kind of wherever you want as a good introduction.
Yeah, you're right. Cross-linguistic connection is a fairly new term in the field. And sometimes teachers, coaches, sometimes even administrators who expect teachers to do it, have the intent to do it, but when it comes, they know that they have to do it. They know that it's important. They know the why, but they struggle with the how to do it. For the audience here, I want to clarify that they may have heard, they may have not heard cross-linguistic connections, but they may have heard the bridge, they might have heard the term metalanguage, they may have heard the term a contrastive analysis. We are all talking about the same thing, the same process, the same goal, but we may label it in a different way. So if you have trained with the bridge, this is the same thing, but we sometimes conceptualize it slightly different, but the goal, the ultimate goal is the same. So with that, sometimes the little understanding, teachers do the best they can with that. And when we visit classrooms, we see that teachers have done, for example, a side-by-side vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And that is, for the teacher, that is a cross-linguistic connection. And it's probably the baseline of a cross-linguistic connection. But the really, the way that I conceptualize cross-linguistic connection is more at the level of the skill. So we have the vocabulary side by side, but we also could do more than that.
Right.
Or could be that we're going to compare sounds of those words, or we're going to compare parts of the words, prefixes, suffixes, root words, or we can compare different type of sentences. Because when we do that, we really help students understand that what they know in their strongest language could be used in this language that they are learning. Or if it's completely different, we avoid what we call negative transfer. Kids writing in their target language in the same way that they write in their more dominant language.
Yeah.
Not the way that we have to do it. So really is building that understanding about similarities and differences about language that we haven't done in, even in bilingual programs, dual language programs. We always taught in the language, but we seldom taught the language and even less similarities and differences about the two program languages. So cross-linguistic connection is really meant to do that, to engage the students in talking about language. And I'm a sociolinguist by train, so I always study, for example, Dr. Michael Halliday, he always said kids learn language by using language and by talking about language.
Right.
So I think cross-linguistic connection creates that space where teachers and students engage in that conversation about the languages that they manipulate through instruction.
Yeah, there's a lot there, and that's a great introduction. But what you just said, I think, is really interesting, which is it creates the space. I feel like so often, and I'll sort of channel my own experience, 17 years as a foreign language teacher, so I did not teach multilingual, well, I taught multilingual learners, but I was teaching them Spanish. And at the time, you know, it was so hard to carve out space to do the things that I thought were most, frankly, most valuable and most interesting, which is let's talk about the difference between the two languages, the similarities between the two languages, and avoid some of the things that you talked about earlier, which is using some of the same patterns, for example, that you have in English to write or speak in Spanish. I always found that really interesting, but I didn't really feel empowered to do it. I felt like it was almost, I hate to say, a waste of time, because I knew it wasn't, but like with the curriculum and everything else, it was always something that was secondary. Is that something that you notice as well? Do we need to carve out time for that and really prove? I mean, in the research, it's already, the value is proven, but do you find districts are still having a hard time sort of, and maybe even individual teachers, incorporating this into their practice because of time?
Oh, definitely. I think for teachers, time is their worst enemy, because they are expected to do so many things. And this is one that when I work with them, I said, look, with cross-linguistic connection, yes, there is that extra thing that you need to think about and plan for. However, when you start building that awareness of the similarities and differences across the languages, you don't have to reteach that much, because the kids are starting to make those connections and using what they already know instead of relearning things, as they are two separate systems.
Yeah,
and
so starting to develop some of the muscle memory, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, we tend to teach Spanish. For example, the most common program languages are in Spanish and English. Mm-hmm. However, there are other language combinations in the nation. But we tend to teach Spanish and English as two separate monolingual parallel systems.
Yep.
And I think what teachers are having a hard time is how they can connect. And most of my latest work has been of using that idea of a trenza, of a braid. That's what teachers need to create with those languages. Where is the opportunity for me to make those connections where the kids are accelerating reading and writing because I don't have to reteach or relearn? They already know it. So the teachers only need to explain how you use what you already know. And those are the opportunities that teachers, those spaces that teachers need to create. Now, the other thing that we need to consider is the message that we send to teachers. Teachers sometimes feel that, oh, I had to do it every single day. I have how many times in the week? And usually it is, we said, start with once a week. You teach the skill in language arts, and then towards the end of the week, you can make connections. As you become more familiar with the practice and the students understand the routine, then you can include more times during the week. But at the beginning, I think you need to start small. So it's really another routine. Is how you engage the kids in talking about language in a space that is okay to use the two languages simultaneously. Because that's another myth in the past. Sometimes we keep that parallel monolingual view of the strict language separation. And in dual language programs or bilingual programs, you know, schedules allow for that. You have the Spanish space, the English space, but then there is this space, this hybrid space, where the two languages could coexist in a much more holistic, organic way. And that's what a cross-linguistic connection space or times truly is.
Right. Yeah, I love this idea of like this being sort of an investment and where you don't have to sort of reteach this stuff over and over again and developing this muscle memory and creating this space for it. So I'm glad I asked that question. You started to get into, you're saying a lot about the benefits for the students, and we'll get into more of that. And we'll also get into later some like specific things that teachers can actually do. But before that, I want to concentrate on teachers for a little bit and ask you a question that I'm sure maybe not listeners, but maybe somebody who's listening knows a teacher who might be overwhelmed or perhaps a little bit resistant to this. And so I want to bring up something that you have argued and that I totally agree with, but that might be difficult for some teachers to sort of conceptualize and just hear your response from it. So you argue that CLC, cross-linguistic connections, is a culturally responsive trans-language practice with many benefits, one of which, and this is the important part, is that it shifts teachers' delivery of instruction from a monolingual perspective to a holistic bilingual approach. We all know, everybody listening to this, you and I, everybody that works at Elevation, everybody that we see at conferences believes that that is the gold standard. We want a holistic bilingual approach. I'd love you to talk a little bit more about that and think about, as you're talking about it, those teachers who might be a little overwhelmed by sort of shifting to this holistic bilingual approach. They probably want to do it, but either they don't know how, they're totally overwhelmed by it, they don't have the training, they're not bilingual. What do I do? Does this help them get there, or what's the extra push that we need to give them?
Yeah, I wanted to deconstruct a little bit that label of cross-linguistic connection as a culturally responsive translanguage in practice, because it has very heavy in multiple aspects. I wanted to start with a little bit of what is translanguaging, why we consider cross-linguistic connection a translanguaging pedagogy. And we wanted to kind of, it's a little bit of what I just said about that Spanish space and English space, but those spaces also allow, within those spaces, we can create an opportunity for the students and the teacher to talk about the similarities and differences between the two languages and using their full linguistic system. Yes, it's the Spanish time, but during Spanish, I can bring English to compare, or it's my English time, so I can bring Spanish to compare. Teacher may stay in the language of instruction, but the students negotiate meaning. It's all about making meaning of the content, of the language, of the literacy routines that we are engaging with. So in this context, CLC is considered a culturally responsive practice because it develops this linguistic practice that the students can use in academic context. It's providing the access to students. Mm-hmm. And also connect, it's the opportunity to connect the two languages that the teacher may not find in other spaces. But if she plans to carve, you talk about carving some time, and that is difficult for teachers. I have my 15, 20 minutes once a week, twice a week, that I will devote with my students to talk about some of these skills that I taught in one space. So for example, I taught plurals in Spanish. Plurals with S, plurals with IS, plural, irregular plurals with ending in Z and changing to CES. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take one thing that I did in Spanish language arts, and I'm going to compare to English. And I'm going to do one thing at a time. So my first conversation, no more than 10 minutes, 15 minutes, will be comparing how do we make plurals in English and Spanish. Is that the same or different? So the teaching of the skill doesn't happen during the cross-linguistic connection. The teaching of the skill happens in one of the languages.
Right.
In language arts. Then I only need 15 minutes to connect to the other language. Now, teachers wonder, do I have to have taught plurals in English? No, we are teaching for transfer. So that's how you accelerate. You don't have to teach it in both. You taught it in one. It's the same. We compare. We move on. That's how you continue to move and use, reuse, recycle what you mm-hmm. learn in language to use it in the other language. In this way, we not only connect, but we also allows the students to develop their bilingual identities. That in bilingual program from the past, we didn't do that because our goal was always English. You use Spanish, but the goal was English. Now, the two languages have the same value. So we are using Spanish to learn English and we are using English to learn Spanish.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of this trends of this braid that teachers can do. And with that, but in order to do that, teachers need to shift their view. And they need to shift from a monolingual, static view of, no, this is Spanish time, we only speak Spanish, or this is English time, and here only English happens, to this holistic view, where there is a purpose for use in an intentional, strategic way, these two languages, because the languages are interdependent. Mm-hmm. And so if we teach the kids that these languages support each other, I think we're going to demystify, and kids on their own are going to start using what they know. And in that way, I think the most important goal here is that cross-linguistic connection facilitates language development.
Yeah.
Because you target language skills consistently.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess that's like my sort of the last part of your explanation there is the biggest question that I have, or the biggest sort of concern that I have. I feel like there are so many well-intentioned educators out there who are sort of stuck in the past. You know, I mean, I think about when I was teaching high school Spanish, I found an incredible amount of value in using English at times, whereas there was so much pressure to say, this is a Spanish only, you can only, and that's foreign language. That's different. I guess my question is really like, is that legacy in your experience still there? Is it still as strong as it was? And it does devoting 10 or 15 minutes to this kind of practice not only help students, but help teachers who may have been a little bit resistant to this sort of come around and become, I mean, is that kind of the experience that you've had?
Yes. One of the things that I think the teachers, there are different type of teachers that we work with. Some that they embrace it, sometimes not even knowing that it may work, but they dive into it and they are believers from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. Or they're doing it and they didn't even know they were doing it. They just called it
exactly.
something different.
And they say, oh, that's what it is that I have been doing? So what we do with those teachers is mainly to structure their mini lessons a little bit more so that they create a routine. And when the kids understand the routine, then their mini lessons go faster because the kids know what to expect. So the structure is pretty consistent. With teachers who resist to the idea, what we have done with my team, I have a team of amazing educators that work with me. I go and I do kind of the PD, and then one of my team members goes and does the modeling in the class with those students. So for those teachers, that is the turning point. They said, oh, okay, she did it with my students. She did it with my curriculum. Look how the kids respond.
Yep.
For others that may not have the luxury of the district providing these services, it takes a little bit longer, but once they give it a go and they try it, I think they start seeing that their work gets a little bit less demanding in a way, because the kids on their own start saying, oh, teacher, look, this is the same as this, or this is different as this. So then they're starting to kind of get a little bit more open.
Sure.
To implement. But I think for them, the biggest complaint is that I don't know, I don't have the time. And I think for us, for those third type of teachers, is to help them understand that it's nothing new. We use what has been already taught.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taking those 15 minutes as an extension of that learning process. So you teach, then you connect. So it's not that you had to develop something completely different. The other thing that we also said, use only things that the kids have read or they have learned. Use vocabulary that is known. Reuse a book that you have read to them. Avoid the unknown. So by using things that have already been done with students, it's less prep time for them.
Yep.
And it's easier for students to, oh, okay. Because these lessons are meant to develop metalinguistic awareness, is meant to develop language. We're not teaching reading, so it doesn't matter if the book is not on the level of the student, because it's not a reading lesson. We're not teaching content, so we can pick any book that we already read in the content area. Our goal is language.
Mm-hmm.
So the book is picked for vocabulary that we can use, or for sentence structure that we can use, or for text structure that we can use to compare. So it's not having to look for something new, is reusing what you already have.
Yeah, which is a huge benefit and something that will take away a lot of that time and that prep, and also probably makes it more comfortable. And it sounds like, you know, what you're saying is once you're front loading this, and once you see that it works and that it's working the right way, you're sort of bought in. It's a question I always like to ask, because there are, you know, some of us can be a little bit idealistic about these concepts and how everybody's going to be the person who embraces it. But the reality is that you know, we have to bring people along for the ride. In order to do that, we have to show value. So thank you. That helps a lot with my understanding.
And to add to that, Steve, is I always said, you kind of mentioned front loading. And I always said to teachers, you front load the work or you put it as reteaching. But the time is going to be done. I think you're going to invest the same amount of time, but you're not going to have the same effect.
Yep.
So I think it's just that you're working more. You're working differently. And I think the effect is also different.
Yeah.
Because the students are really moving along in a different way through that trajectory of biliteracy that they have to go through in bilingual dual language programs.
Great. So maybe a minute and a half ago, you mentioned that the sort of one of the goals of this is developing multilinguistic awareness. Metalinguistic awareness, which is another sort of buzzword. So let's start by just making sure we have a solid definition of what metalinguistic awareness is for anybody who may not know. And then I want to dive into some of the levels of language that are addressed through these metalinguistic conversations. So can we start with just your definition of metalinguistic awareness?
I think there are two terms that we need to talk about. One is metalanguage. Metalanguage is the process in which you engage the students in talking about language. Metalinguistic awareness is what the students develop they become aware of those similarities and differences. So one is external to the individual, one is internal to the individual. So it's the byproduct of those metalinguistic conversations is metalinguistic awareness. So what you do by creating these cross-linguistic connections mini lessons is providing the opportunity for students to actually develop metalinguistic awareness over time. The more they talk about language, the more they understand how these two languages operate, are similar, are different, and they can use it as they continue to grow and develop.
Great. And so am I right to say that sort of metalinguistic awareness is something that you build upon? You sort of probably never get to the highest level. You can always build more and more. And so it's not something that we're just trying to get to at the end and then we're there and then we move on. It's a constant sort of learning process, lifelong learning, I would imagine.
And I think also important for teachers is that you don't assess the skill in a metalinguistic and in a cross-linguistic connection. Because the cross-linguistic connection mini lesson is just to develop that awareness. The skill is assessed in the language arts in which it has been taught.
Right.
So, and some they said, well, I assess the skill in Spanish, but when I will assess that in English, well, when it comes in your scope and sequence in English, you will do a quick review. You don't have to reteach it because it has already been done through cross-linguistic connection. You do a quick review, you assess, and you move on. So the assessment always of the skill happens in the main content area in which it has been taught. The cross-linguistic connection is just to move above that, is more cognitively demanding. It has a particular outcome that is just to develop that level of awareness about the languages.
Right. Okay, so let's kind of get a little bit more specific here. I want to walk through the levels of language addressed through these metalinguistic conversations. And there's four that you've outlined, and this is from your, I'm sure this is something that you've talked a lot about, but this is most recently from, I think, the presentation that you did at La Cosecha. And it's phonology, morphology, grammar, and syntax. So if we could kind of quickly walk through each one of those so people are aware and how they connect. And then we'll try to get a little bit more specific about some things that teachers can actually do with these different levels to help create this metalinguistic awareness.
When you say those big words again, teachers, the first thing that they feel, oh, I didn't take a linguistic class, so yep. I don't know how to do this. Those are things that they actually teach, regardless in which state you work. If you are in a common core state, if you are in a Texas state, wherever you are teaching this day in and day out through your language arts. So it could be in the language strand, it could be in common core, for example. These are standards that you teach. So regardless if you don't know in what category they belong, these are things that you consistently do. So that's the first step to avoid that fear of, I don't know how to do this.
Yeah, well, you've heard me, like, I mean, these are things, sorry to interrupt, but these are things that I've talked about in many, many of the episodes that we've done on Highest Aspirations. I don't consider myself an expert like you are, but you could hear me sort of confusing some of these terms as I'm speaking just because there's so much and it can be so overwhelming. So for a teacher hearing all of this, I'm glad you brought that up. It's like, we have to remember that these are things that we are sort of innately doing, and now we're providing definitions and terms. And I really appreciate that you are sort of cautioning people to not be overwhelmed by this, because I think it's really, really easy to become overwhelmed. I just wanted to add that in. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine. I think it builds that clarity that we are trying to convey with this conversation. When we talk about phonology, is comparing sounds. That's your linguistic 101 that you can take. Phonology, we are comparing sounds. For morphology, we are comparing parts of words, like prefixes, suffixes, root words. When we are talking about grammar. We can compare any aspect of the corpus of a language, parts of speech, verbs, verb tenses, we get contractions, acentos in Spanish, for example. So anything that has to do with the language itself. And then many people consider grammar and syntax together. I separate those because I think we can also guide students in discussing type of sentences, that compounds, complex, simple, interrogative, exclamative, enunciative. So we can also show them in what ways these sentences are constructed. So that's kind of what these levels of language or aspects of language are really. And the teachers just need to be looking at what the kids are struggling the most. And those are the, because there is so much that they teach that they cannot compare everything. Mm-hmm. They need to pick what are the things that they see in the student's performance that will be the best support for them. Because for many of them, it's just to have these conversations where they see these vocabulary words or sentences side by side. Most times that I work with teachers, they say, but I taught that. I don't know how they didn't get it. And I said, because you taught it here and you taught it here, but you never put it together for them to have that aha moment and said, oh, that's what she meant. Or that's what he meant. I have been trying to learn and doing so. Kids can make the connections on their own, but most kids can't. So right. Teachers create these spaces to do that, to engage them.
Hence the word, the term that you mentioned earlier, bridging, right? The bridge.
Exactly. Exactly.
So this is a really nice transition into sort of talking about some of the CLC mini lessons that you talked about in your session at La Cosecha. So for anybody who wasn't there and saw that session, myself included, I was not at La Cosecha. I looked through the deck that you had that you sent me, and I found them to be very sort of attainable and easy to apply. So I love it. This is kind of the part where I'm trying to give listeners, and it's hard over a podcast, and I recognize that, but just give listeners a sense of the kind of things that they can do and incorporate into their lessons. And then if they're interested in learning more later, we'll link them to some places where they can find some resources that you have. But for now, could you talk about one or two of these mini lessons that you think could be incorporated fairly easily into a lesson, particularly for a teacher who maybe hasn't sort of at least formally explored this before?
There are different types of mini lessons that teachers can do. And the different types are mainly the type of resources they want to use to create these mini lessons. Sometimes they can use what we call pair text. That is the same text in English and Spanish. And yes, audience, you heard me well. We always talk about do not use translated text. But the reality is that for a cross-linguistic connection, you want to have the two texts if you want to use their text. So the kids can say, how do you do it in English? How do you do it in the other language?
I love that you mentioned that because it's a little taboo in some circles, you know? And we can't just throw things away because we don't like them anymore. There's use for almost everything.
There is space for certain practices with intentionality and very strategically used. And in this case, that's the case. The other thing that they can do is to really do using vocabulary of the content area. The kids are learning about cooling and heating. Oh, these vocabularies, I can use cooling, heating, melting, freezing, and I can do the ending ing that in Spanish will end in ando yendo. Mm-hmm. So that's that I'm using that because we learn it in science. So I'm going to reuse it. But now it's going to have my grammar lens because I taught verb tenses in English. That helps me to show how we do that in Spanish.
Yeah.
So that's a simple way of thinking about vocabulary, of thinking about sentences, of thinking about how to use those texts. Or if you don't have that and you have only one book, I use that book, sentence or vocabulary, and then I translate it. And if an English teacher, yes, you can still do this because you have a partner and or you have a colleague that knows Spanish. Mm-hmm. Or if you are in the third, fourth, or fifth, or upper grades, you have kids who have been in the program who can be the ones helping and co-creating with you, because this is a collaborative event where teachers and students co-create, talk about language and co-create these anchor charts, identify the patterns together, talk about similarities and differences with teacher support.
And so what a great way, by the way, to empower students and to empower colleagues and increase collaboration in a profession that we know can be very, very siloed and very, very isolating.
And that is also another characteristic of that culturally responsive translanguage.
It's great.
So that's very important. There is no, something important for teachers to understand is that there is not a cross-linguistic connection if you don't create an anchor chart with students where the two languages are connected, because you had to make that visible for students.
The cross-linguistic
connection responsibility of the teacher is to make language visible to students and to guide, not to tell, to guide them in exploring and discovering in what ways the languages are the same or different.
We try
to give too much information, and that is okay when you're teaching for the first time the skill. But when it comes to that level, now you step back and you said, what do you notice? In what ways this is the same or different? Talk to your partner. And so it's just giving them the opportunity to start developing that. That is the metalinguistic awareness process.
So there's so much more to explore here. We're just scraping the surface of this. And I often tell people when they ask me about the Highest Aspirations podcast, well, what's the goal? And the goal is not that this is like professional development that you can run with and use right now. The goal is really to inspire people to take the next step and maybe to give them one or two things that they can try out. So again, we're going to link to lots of information that folks can look through and kind of develop on their own. But I want to, as we kind of wrap up here, I want to bring up, if I can, sort of one more buzzword, although this one probably is a little bit more common for people. And it's like, we keep talking about these steps to get to these different levels. We've been talking a lot about metalinguistic awareness and how that's kind of a spectrum, and it's not something that's assessed and that we kind of learn over time. I've heard you talk about metalinguistic awareness and then say eventually biliteracy, like that's like the next level. So biliteracy is the next term that I want to get into. Explain that journey and sort of what it looks like in practice, because again, these are terms I think everybody's heard, but I feel like it's a little fuzzy in terms of how it all works together.
Steve, biliteracy is a very complex term in a way that you don't develop biliteracy over time. You develop biliteracy in a trajectory. We all develop biliteracy in different ways because of many factors, what the students bring to the classroom, the style of the teacher, the level of understanding of practices that develop biliteracy. For example, there are three specific pedagogies that facilitate biliteracy development. One is interdisciplinary planning, when you connect not only the languages, but also the content areas. Mm-hmm. So your day becomes more like a literacy day, that you weave literacy across. You really take the skills in language arts and you put it in the content areas and you bring the content into your language arts. So it really becomes that weaving that we expect. The second one is what we call preview, view, and review. You preview in the opposite language of the lesson to build some schema. And then you review again in the opposite language of the lesson to clarify misconceptions, to make sure students understood. And the third one is cross-linguistic connection. So teachers really need to do different things, different weavings, in order for students to, over time, develop biliteracy. Mm-hmm. And biliteracy is a dynamic, ongoing process that bilinguals engage in orally or in writing over time. So what teachers do every year does matter, because if the kids are not going to develop it in one grade level, this is a process that over time, kids are going to be able to navigate both languages with ease and be able to read, write, talk, think and assess, because in schools, assessments is an important aspect. Give me the test in English, I can do it. Give me the test in Spanish, I can do it because I'm bilingual and biliterate.
Great. Yeah, that's helpful. And like, so it's helpful to understand that cross-linguistic connections, what we've been really talking a lot about during this interview, is kind of one of sort of three pedagogies for translanguaging that will help build that biliteracy, which means that there are two more things that we're going to have to get into at some point, Sandra, which is interdisciplinary planning and then preview, view, review. So we'll talk more about that later. We don't have time for this today, but it's important to understand this is one of the buckets that we've gotten into today. Okay, so I'm curious to learn, because there's so much here, and I know you do a tremendous amount of work, both at conferences and at school districts, and as you mentioned, you have a great group of educators who work with you. So how can people learn more about the work that you're doing? Because again, we just kind of scraped the surface today.
Well, we do a lot of work at schools. That's mainly our work. It's just supporting teachers, administrators, coaches, through professional development, modeling, co-teaching, and then coaching. So we have a cycle that we provide. So we don't believe in the one-time professional development. That we give all this beautiful binder and then teachers have the best intentions to use it,
That's
but it
because that doesn't work.
doesn't work. The one time thing, it didn't work for me as a teacher.
Me neither.
And I believe that when you chunk the information and you support the teacher in the process, they really apply. And then the coaching process is to really push their thinking in their practice to go beyond that. Then you give them another chunk of information, and then slowly that becomes part of their teaching tools. So I have a website where we list all of our services. We customize K through 12 for grade levels type of programs. Teachers or administrators mainly, they always ask, what is your program? And I said, we don't do programs, we do curriculum and instruction. And we develop curriculums, dual language curriculums for districts. So we take the resources and we use what they have and we make it to really support this biliteracy development. So that's mainly, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook. So, all the things, the social media that people could find me. But definitely, I can send you all that information so you can provide it through the blog.
Perfect. Yeah. And we will put link all that information on the show notes of the episode itself. So if you're listening on whatever podcast platform, it'll be on there. And we'll also put it on the blog post, which will be on our EL community, elevationeducation.com/EL community. Last question, Sandra, a question that I ask everyone, but I don't know if I mentioned this at the intro, but this is the first interview episode of 2024, season 12, which is hard to believe. And so you're the first I'm going to ask this. Is there a book or a film or any other resource that's had sort of an important influence on you, either personally or professionally, that you want to recommend to listeners for the first time in 2024?
Oh, definitely. I'm sure that people are familiar with the work of Ofelia Garcia, her research team. So, Ofelia's work has been very influential in my work, especially in the translanguaging realm, as well as the Literacy Square with Dr. Kathy Escamilla, that they just have a book out on biliteracy writing that is extremely valuable for teachers and is a subject that teachers struggle to really how to teach writing and even more so how to teach writing to bilingual and multilingual students. So those are a lot of those resources that influence my work tremendously. And some of that work is seen in my latest books. One is La Enseñanza en el Aula Bilingüe, is Content, Language, and Biliteracy, originally published by Caslon, now I think Brooks, because they have sold the company. And also the Biliteracy para Todos is a product that we created with Okapi that is has a complete set of cross-linguistic connections mini lesson. Those books really have a lot on cross-linguistic connections. And the latest book by Velasquez Press is called CLIF, Content, Language, and Literacy Framework for Multilingual Learners, and also has a section on the importance of connecting all these three things for biliteracy that we talk about cross-linguistic connections, but also interdisciplinary planning and PVR. So I think those the seminal work of Kathy and Dr. Ofelia Garcia have been my kind of transition into the work that I have been doing lately in the last 5-7 years.
That's great. Yeah, Dr. Escamilla has been on the podcast before. She does tremendous work. We've collaborated with her. And obviously familiar with the work of Ofelia Garcia as well. And we will link to some of those resources as well as your work as well, so that folks can look at. And again, I feel like we hopefully gave people a primer. And again, the purpose of this is let's take the next step. So what is it that you can do to sort of incorporate some of these practices, front load them? And hopefully the people who are listening here, I know most people that are listening here are sort of, their role is more to help support others to do this work. And so now hopefully you have some inspiration to be able to do that, thanks to the work that you've done, Sandra.
One last kind of advice on this,
yeah,
for is that start small. Start with the content area that you feel more comfortable with and with the skill that you feel more comfortable with. So start small, and as you and your students understand what these conversations are about, and you are able to create a routine that works for you, then you start extending into other content areas. This is not necessarily for the language arts teachers. This could be done in any content area. So every teacher could become a language development teacher through these cross-linguistic connections conversations.
Great. Good advice for this topic, and probably good advice for most things that you're just starting out with. And with that, Sandra Medicotti, thank you so much for joining us on Highest Aspirations. Like I said, this has been something that's been in the works since the fall, and appreciate you being episode number one of 2024, and we'll be in touch. I hope to collaborate more in the future.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Steve.
Thanks for listening to Highest Aspirations. If you liked our show, please be sure to join the ELL community at elevationeducation.com/ELL community, where you'll find all the episodes of Highest Aspirations and other resources to help educators maximize the impact on their English language learners. Also, let us know how we're doing by writing a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.